The Year the Hedge Funds Died. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The hedge funds seem to be falling like June bugs at the screen door. More hedge funds have closed down for good this year than at any time since the financial crisis, according to new calculations by the folks at Bloomberg News. These are fancy and often expensive investment vehicles for high net worth people, and many have struggled not just to beat the market, but even to keep up. On Tuesdays, we consult Julie Niemann, the analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, David.
With hedge funds, you pay for this privilege, don't you?
Through the nose is how you pay. Basically, you're giving the money manager 2% or 3% an annual fee and 20 or 30% of the annual profits, if you make the profits. Obviously, they don't share in the losses. Those are all yours.
Now, do you remember back before the financial crisis? And it was a long time ago now, but like in 2007, hedge funds were all the rage.
They were very popular simply because they were the exclusive domain of rich people. They didn't mind giving managers those big fees. Some of those hedge funds made fantastic returns. But then, like anything else, everybody else gets into the business. And that's what happened along the way. Hedge funds started to proliferate like weeds.
Now, some hedge funds have found geniuses to run them, and they do perform quite well.
They do, and that is a small handful. They basically have very large numbers of assets so that they can go in and dominate a particular investment. They're usually the first ones in, which is one of the key things you have to be. When you find a market inefficiency, you have to be the first one in. When you have a lot of people following the same strategy, it invalidates the principle, and that makes profits non-existent.
All right, 2014, apparently not really the year of the hedge fund. Julie Niemann at Smith Moore & Company, thank you.
You bet.
Who says international trade is a dreary subject? Netflix is betting that the life of an Italian mercantile trader will be the next House of Cards. The streaming video company has put up a reported $90 million to produce a series about Marco Polo. Signore Polo's story has a lot in common with Netflix's ambitions to grow its global audience, particularly in Asia. Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
Netflix's growth in the U.S. is slowing, and the potential for new subscribers is now outside the United States. That means
when they're making programming decisions, they got to make sure that the content that they have plays in as many territories as possible.
Andrew Wallenstein is co-editor-in-chief at Variety. He says Marco Polo needs to create a big buzz that could convince foreigners to sign up for a Netflix subscription. But, says media analyst Max Dawson, Netflix also has to keep those subscribers month after month.
One way of doing that is by investing in content that will be exclusive to the platform.
And for Netflix, that hasn't always been the case. Its original series, House of Cards, aired on competing networks internationally. But with Marco Polo, Netflix owns all international rights. Dawson thinks the $90 million investment could pay off.
Or it could be rejected by global viewers who see it for what it is. Content being dictated by a corporation's global expansionist ambitions.
The series will be available for worldwide binging on December 12th. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
In case you wondered, an MBA is not the only way to go. The co-founder of the huge social media company Twitter was a graphic designer. Biz Stone is now CEO of an outfit called Jelly. Among its offerings, an app called Super. Mr. Stone, good morning.
Thank you, David, for having me.
So, an opportunity to have some fun. I was just playing with Super here. This is about images and text that you can send other people.
Yeah, it's really about having fun and expressing your opinion. And it turns out people like to express their opinion online. Who knew? We start you off with a declarative phrase like the best or I love. And then you finish it. And then while you're typing, we're magically searching for images in the background. We slide one in for you and you can change it if you want. And then all of a sudden you've created like a little work of art, like a little Barbara Kruger.
I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's not revolutionary, though, is it? And that's okay.
Exactly. It's not revolutionary. It's not the most innovative thing in the world. It's fun. But what I've realized in 15 years of doing this is that if something is fun, then people will use it. If a lot of people use it, then it has the potential to become important.
How do you create a culture around a new app, because that's what you need here. You need a community.
You just really watch for patterns. You try to stay out of the way. But when you see certain patterns emerging that you really like, you know, you try to double down on those. You try to say, well, what are they trying to do? Let's build a feature. Or, oh, look what they're doing. Let's highlight that so we can get more of that. That's how you build a culture.
Now, Biz, my father's an English professor who thinks that English majors will rule the earth. But I've also spent a lot of time with graphic designers. They also think differently. I don't know. You think that designers are beginning to rule the earth? I mean, that's your background, right? You're a designer.
Yeah, I started out as an artist, and then I became a graphic designer, and then I became a technologist. Graphic design is really just problem solving in a creative way. And that's sort of taking elements that already exist and putting them together in new ways to make something else. And that gets back to the heart of what super is. You know, it's just the combination of things that we've put together, and the way that we've put them together makes it unique and fun and different. And that really is speaking to the soul of graphic design.
Jelly CEO and Twitter co-founder Biz Stone has a book called Things a Little Bird Told Me, Confessions of a Creative Mind. Mr. Stone also has a prediction that companies will soon spend most of their advertising money on charity and the rest of their advertising money on bragging about their charity. If you want to hear all of that interview, the director's cut, it's at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.